The daf for today is Kuf Nun Dalid, and we'll start with Rav Zvid. But before we start with Rav Zvid, let me just review the last 2 points that we made in the name of Rava. Rava had objected to Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama said a machamer achar behemto, if he sort of pushes his animal, he leads his animal from behind, as the animal is carrying a burden on its back, then he's chayev a chatos if he did that b'shogeg, and he's chayev skila if he did it b'mezid, if he did it deliberately. And Rava raised 2 points against him. First of all, the source and the paradigm case of a chiyuv chatos b'shogeg is avodah zara, and in the parashah of avodah zara it says Torah achas yelachem li osa b'shogeg. And osa b'shgaga means we need to ka'avid ma'isa begufe, that he did an action with his body. Here, he didn't violate the Shabbos with his body. He guided the animal, but the animal was violating the Shabbos by carrying. And the second objection of Rava is because the Mishnah says that if somebody is mechal Shabbos, then there's one particular malacha for which he's not chayv. And the assumption here is, says Rava, that it might be mechamer. So let's start now with Rav Zvid, and we're on the top of Kuf Nun Dalet Omen Aleph. Rav Zvid Masni Hachi, he had a different formulation, a different version of the statement of Rami Bar Chama, which came under the attack of Rava, in which Omer Rami Bar Chama Mechamaracha Behema B'Shabbos B'Shogeg Eino Chayef Chatos, but B'Mezid Chayef Skila. According to this version of Rami Bar Chama, it's true that we will equate all Chiyuv Shogeg and Chatos with Avodah Zorah. Avodah Zorah becomes, as we said before, the paradigmic case, and therefore we need a Maisa Begufo. So that in the case of Mechamer, where the animal is doing the Maisa, there you would certainly not be Chayiv a Karban Chatos B'Shogeg. But on a Mezid level, since the Torah says, Lotase kol malocha ato ubehem techa, meaning you or with your animal. And the Torah goes on to say that mechale mos yumos, you get skila for that. Therefore, in the case of mechamer, you chayev skila. And the breakthrough here of this version of Rami Bar Chama is that we split, which is something that we've never found before, we don't have any precedent for this, split between the chiyuv chatos b'shogeg and the chiyuv skila b'mezim. Mesiv Rava, so Rava asks Akasha on Rami Bar Chama, according to this second version of Rami Bar Chama from a Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Hamachalas Hashabbos Bedover Shachayov Al Shigoso Chatos Chayovim Al Zdono Skila, which means that we have a package deal: Shogeg Mezid, Chatos Skila. The two sides of the same coin. Let's be medayik from the language of the Mishnah in Masechta Sanhedrin. Ha ein chayovin al shigoso chatos. In a case where you're not chayov a chatos for shkogo, then ein chayovin al zdono skila. Now, if you're telling me that in the case of mechamer, because you need a maisa begufe, which is lacking in the case of mechamer, therefore you're not chayov a karban chatos for shkogo, then ipso facto you should not be chayov for mezid skila. How can you tell me that in the case of mechamer, although you're exempt from a chatos in a shogeg situation, you chayv skil in a mezid situation, the Mishnah seems to see it as a package deal? So the Gemara answers, no, your diuk, Rova, is not a fair diuk. Mikatani ha ein chayovin. The Mishnah didn't add that piece which you, Rova, interpreted and were medayik for the Mishnah. The Mishnah never said, well, if you're not chayv a chatos in shkoga, therefore ipso facto you're not chayev skila in a mezid situation. But rather hachi kamar, what the Mishnah was telling us is davar shechayovim al shigoso chatos. If you are chayev shkoga chatos, then chayovim al zdono skila. Meaning by definition, if you are chayev for shogeg, then you're going to be chayev for mezid. However, the reverse is possible, that yesh davar she'en chayov in al shkoga. There may be another case where you chayev skila, where you're not chayev a chatos b'shkoga. If you chayev a chatos b'shkoga, then if so facto, there's no question about it, therefore you're chayev skila b'mezit. But there may be a situation where you chayev skila, right, all S is P, but it doesn't mean that you couldn't have A also is included in P. Any kind you have X, which means a chiyuv shkaga, then you'll have a chiyuv skila. But that doesn't mean the opposite, that you'll only have a chiyuv skila in a case where you chayav a karban chatas b'shogeg. So you can have a situation where you're exempt from karban chatas b'shogeg for a technical reason in hilchus shkagos, and a chatas depends upon maisa begufe. In the case of Mechamer, he had no maisa begufe. But nevertheless, you chayav skila b'meiz. So therefore, Rava's objection based on the Mishnah is not a valid objection. Rava, now, in this next piece of Gemara, we have a question about exactly who's related to whom over here in terms of the speaker. We have Rava, and according to one particular version, he's Achuha de Rav Mari Bar Rachel. He is the brother of Rav Mari. Now, it's interesting that Rav Mari, if you notice, is named after his mother. You know, he's called Bar Rachel. That's unusual. And that might indicate that this Rav Mari might have had a non-Jewish father, and he came from a mixed marriage. Amrile, others say, Avua, this Rava was the father, this is not the classic Rava that we're familiar with Rava Nabai, that this Rava was the father of Rav Mari Bar Rachel. And if he was the father of Rav Mari Bar Rachel, then we're left with a little bit of a question as to why Rav Mari is called Bar Rachel. He should have been called Rav Mari Bar Rava. And the Gemara takes a little bit of a digression here before presenting what Rava wants to say in a halachic sense, in a halachic world. The Gemara goes into this two versions of the genealogy here. And the Gemara says, L'lishna Basra, if you consider that Rava was the father of Rav Mari, not the brother of Rav Mari, which means he may have shared the same mother as Rav Mari, but rather he himself, Rava, was the father of Rav Mari, then Kasha, I have a question, because I have a proof, says the Gemara, that Mari was a ger, meaning his father was not Jewish. How do I know this? Because Kasha ha derav achshere l'Rav Mari bar Rochel. There was an issue as to whether or not this Rav Mari bar Rochel would be appointed over the tzibur of Klal Yisrael, which means that he would get a communal position, perhaps. You can call him a parnas al atzibur. Parnas is someone who's in charge of all communal needs and financial needs for the city. And the halacha is that a ger who comes from non-Jewish background is not appointed over the tzibur. And that's derived from a pasuk, Mikerav Achecha Tasimu Alecha Melech. Mikerav Achecha means the pasuk tells me he's got to have a Jewish lineage in order to be appointed. Now Rav went out of his way and stretched the law a little bit to appoint Rav Mari Bar Rochel. Umanye Bepurse de Bavel. So Rav appointed, he used his weight, his political authority, so to speak, as the teacher and amongst his disciples, in order to secure a position, an appointment, for this Mari Bar Rachel as a Pursaya de Bavel, that he would be in charge of the Tzibur in Bavel. And Rav had to pull some weight over here, we call it vitamin P, if you know what I mean, because the father of Mari Bar Rachel, and that's why he's called after his mother, was not Jewish. And therefore, Mikerav Achecha would not apply. Now, if you're telling me, according to the second Girsa, that this Rava is the father of Mari Bar Rachel, then obviously Mari Bar Rachel came from perfect lineage, Mikerav Achecha, his father was Jewish. And therefore, we have to go with the first approach, that Rava was a maternal brother to Mari Bar Rachel. But in fact, Mari Bar Rachel's paternal side was not Jewish blood, and therefore Rav had to push him in order to get him a position as a Pursaya de Bava. So the Gemara rejects this and says, Dilma, Trey Mari Bar Rachel Hafi. Maybe there are two people with that same name. I don't know what these statistical probabilities are, but so it could be that one of them was really the son of a ger, of a non-Jew, had a non-Jewish father, and the other one was Rav's son. So it could be that Rav is the father of Rav Mari, but this Rav Mari is not the same Rav Mari that Rav had appointed as a Pursaya de Bavel, whose father was not Jewish. Okay, now we get back to the sugya itself. That was just a digression. So the Gemara says, Havi Masni Leila Hadit Shmaita Mishmeid Rav Yochanan Liftar. Rava, and again, this is Rava, either the brother of Rav Mari or the father of Mari, but this Rava had a tradition that dates back to Rav Yochanan, that Mechamer is Potter. And what does that mean, he's Potter? Om Rav Yochanan Mechamer Acha Behemto B'Shabbos, according to this tradition, Potter Miklum. He's not going to be chayv anything in the case of Mechamer. There are no punishments, neither in Shogeg nor in Mes. V'Shogeg lo Mechayv Chatos, the Huksha Kol HaTorah Kula Avodah Zorah. The paradigmic cases we said before, V'Chiyuv Chatos B'Shogeg is Avodah Zorah, and that requires Asiya, a Maisa Begufe. So therefore, Mechamer is exempt from Chatos. U'B'Mezid Nami lo Mechayv. Why? Because we're going to interpret that Mishnah as we did before. Disnan, the Mishnah in Sanhedrin says, "Amachalas Hashabbos b'dover shechayovim al shigigoso chatos v'alzdono skila." And again, the Brisa presents a package deal, and there are two halachas that are interdependent. One is the chiyuv shkaga and chatos, and the other is the chiyuv mezid skila. And ha, and here in the case of Mechamer, we've already proven from the analogy to avodah zarah, which sets up the condition of Maisa Begufe, that he's not Chayav Achatos, and therefore he's not Chayav Al Shigos Achatos, he ain't Chayavin Al Zdono Skil, likewise he's not Chayav Skil. So Rava continues his presentation in the transmission in the name of Rav Yochanan. He says, Belav Hochi, Belav Nami Lo Mechayv. Let's ask another question. Okay, we've found a technical ptur in Mechamer, for which he's not going to be chayav skila because he's not chayav a chatas b'shkoga. Okay, that's only as far as skila is concerned. We will not condemn him for a capital punishment. But what about a lav? Every lav in the Torah generates malchus. Maybe in a person who violates the iser of Shabbos of Mechamer and he works his animal, maybe he should get malchus. So the Gemara says, "Balav nami lo mechayv." He's not going to even be chayv as a lav, even though the Torah says, "Lo tase kol melocha ata ubehem techo," which sounds like a lav, which the violation of which would generate malchus. No. Dehavi le lav shenitan lazharas misas bezdin. What that means is, at least according to Rashi and most Rishonim, is that when you have a lav, and the majority of cases, the primary application of that lav is a capital crime, but there's one particular scenario in which you could violate that very same lav without being chayav misa, then you're potter from malchus, according to one opinion in Masechta Makkos. This is a gigantic machlokas in Masechta Makkos. But according to one opinion, we have something called a lav anitan lazharas misas bezdin, that the violation of the lav in most scenarios, in most situations, will generate a chayav misa. In such a case, there's a technical ptur from malchus. Now let's take this lav of lotase kol melocha ata ubehem techa. In most cases, when you violate this lav, lotase kol melocha, you chayv misa. Now there's another situation in which ata ubehem techa, where you violate the lav through the mechamer, through the animals carrying, and in that case, you're not going to get malchus because it's a subsidiary, an extension, it's a secondary kind of application and violation of the lav. The primary violation of the lav is a chiyuv misa. Kol lav anita lasaros misas bezdin ein lokan alav. And the Gemara discusses this at great length in Masechta Makkos on Daf Yud Gimel Amid Beis. And the Tanoim, with the exception of Rabbi Shmuel, maintain that lav anita lasaros misas bezdin does not generate does not generate malchus. And even though Mechamer could never generate a chi of misa, there's no situation. But nevertheless, it's included in the lav, which, generally speaking, would be Mechayev misa. And that's how most Rishonim learned this Gemara, this principle of lav hanitan losaris misas based. The Rambam has a slightly different variation, and maybe we'll see if we have time for the Rambam sheet. Now we turn to Daf Kuf Nun Dalet Amin Beis. The Gemara goes on to say that afilu l'man diomer, even according to Rabbi Yishmael in Masechta Makis, who says that lokin alav shenitan lasaris misas beisin, nevertheless Mechamer would not generate malchus. And why is that? Because this lav is an incomplete lav. It's not what we call a lav gomur. And why is that so? Because the Torah adds one extra word. It says, lo sase kol molocha ata ubehem techo. The extra word, ata. Lichtov rachmona. If the Torah wanted to give us a complete violation of a lav in the case of Mechamer, it should have omitted the word ata. It should have just said, lo tase kol molocha ubehem techo. But ata lomali. The word ata, which means you did the molocha, addressing itself to gufe, to the body of the person, the human being. Hu niyu mechayev? Ata lomali. Hu niyu mechayev? The Torah is adding the word ata to tell me that you're chayev. But behemto? Lo mechayev. If the malacha was done through the agency of the animal, you're not chayev. So the final maskon of this Gemara is that according to everyone, again, with the exception of Rami Bar Chama, but I mean to say, in the final version of Rabbi Yochanan and Rava, we're going to agree that Mechamer is not Chaya for sure, not Chatas B'Shogeg, and not Skila B'Mezin. Not only that, there's no Chi of Malchus as well. So this is called, in the language of the Achronim, the commentaries, a Lav Tafel, which means a secondary kind of Lav. It's an extension, but not a real, genuine love. And therefore, for its violation, you don't get malchus. Okay, we're going back now to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Higia l'chotzer hachitzona. You remember that where the Mishnah, at the beginning of this perek, was addressing a situation where a person is on his way back from travels into the city, and now it got dark, it's time for Shabbos. And we spoke at great length about his pocketbook, and he should send it with this one, send it with that one. Then there was another issue about kelim that are on top of the animal. Now, he wants to take these kelim off the animal, and the Mishnah says, "No tell us hakelim hanitolim b'Shabbos." That certain kelim, certain of these utensils, are what we call klisha malachto leheter. He has no problem of just simply lifting them off the back of the animal. However, the Mishnah continues that Einom Nitolim B'Shabbos, an event that the Kelim are Mukta, then Mater Sachavolim, these Kelim are tied down to the back of the animal with ropes, he should untie the ropes, Veim Noflim Me'alehem, and the Kelim will fall. Omer Rav Huna wants to know, what about the case of a very sensitive, fragile kli that if you allow it to fall, it will smash, it will break into pieces. He'll take a tremendous financial loss. For example, klei zchuchit, which are glassware. Hois amar Rav Huna, hois behem tuuna klei zchuchis. If the animal is carrying glassware, then what option do we have in order that he should be prevented from suffering such a financial loss? Mevi karim uksosos, he can bring different kinds of cushions and pillows, umeniach tachteha, and he places them on the ground. After all, these are not mukta, so he can place them on the ground. Umatir chavolim vehasakim noflim me'alehem, he will again loosen the ropes that tie down this glassware to the back of the animal. The glassware will fall onto these pillows that will cushion the fall, and therefore he won't lose the kelim. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, v'anant nan. The Mishnah says, notul sa kelim anitol v'shabes. why is this glassware mukta? If it's not mukta, you know, you have a glass jar or jug, a glass cup, whatever it might be, then why doesn't he just take it with his hands? Why did Rav Huda have to rule that he should loosen the straps and let it fall onto the cushions? And the Gemara answers, Kikoma Rav Huda. Rav Huda was addressing a different problem, and that is a clay zchuchis that's mukta. And what would be a clay zchuchis that's mukta? Bekarne de umna. Now, you may recall that the word umna in Masechta Shabbos means a bloodletter. And that was a profession. And in order to sometimes remove the blood from a person's body, let's say to lower his blood pressure, what they did was they used a glass pipe of some sort. And since there's no such thing as bloodletting on Shabbos, that would be a severe, serious violation of Melech HaShabbos. Therefore, this glass pipe, if you call it that, would have the status of muktzah. It has no function on Shabbos. It's designated exclusively for that purpose. Now, in terms of categorizing this in the laws of muktzah, I'm not sure. There are two possibilities here. One could be muktzah machmas mius, something that you find disgusting, so the only purpose you would designate this pipe for would only be exclusively for bloodletting. You wouldn't use it for anything else. Or it could be it's a muktzah machmas chisaron kis. It could be that this was a valuable kli, and you didn't want to mess around with it. You know, this was the utensil for the professional bloodletter. And in such a case, lo chazil, there's no benefit that he would have to use this kli, this glass pipe, on Shabbos. That makes it henceforth muktzah. Now we have a problem. He wants to take it off the animal's back. It's already Shabbos. He can't move the muktzah. How is he going to save himself the loss of this glass? If you're going to tell him to loosen the straps, then the glass is going to fall on the floor. It's going to be smashed to smithereens. So the Gemara answers, maybe, this is Rav Huna's recommendation, maybe karmu ksusos. He'll bring these cushions, and then they'll fall, this kli will fall. Now, watch what's happening here. He is moving cushions for the purpose, not of the cushions themselves, but of mukta. So the Gemara asks, v'hokom avatel kli mehichano. And we have a principle that when you have a kli that's muchan, right? 90% of our kelim are muchanim, right? They're prepared for Shabbos use. Like, for example, these cushions, which you can use, you know, as a pillow to sleep on. And now, what's going to happen is, you are going to use these cushions to receive the glass, and you're not going to move. You're not going to take away this cushion and move it in any way until after Shabbos. Because if you do so, the glass will fall and it'll break into pieces. So now what you've done is, you've taken something that's muchan and you mevatel, you nullified its status as muchan. And that we're not allowed to do on Shabbos. And the Gemara answers, no, Rav Huna is talking about a case of shlifei zutri. He's talking about smaller pieces of glass. Again, if they fall from a high place, then they'll be smashed. So that means if they're on the animal's back and you loosen the straps, that's no good. But if you cushion the fall, then the glass is very close to the ground. At that point, you can remove the cushion. The glass will fall on the ground. It won't break. Why? Because it's a very small fall. You know, it's like a tefach above the ground. So in that case called shlifei zutri, there's no bittel kli mehechano, because even after the cushion will receive the glass, he can still remove the cushion. The glass will gently fall on the ground and it won't break. Meisvei, the Gemara asks a kasha, we have a brisa that says, Hoysu behemto tu una tevel va'ash shoshis. Now, tevel, you know, is something that you can't use on Shabbos because it's an iser misa b'dei shemayim to eat tevel. And not only that, there's no heter, there's no leniency to be mafrish, truma, or maser on Shabbos. So tevel is something that's eino roi, lo chazia. He doesn't have any use for it at all, and that's mukta. What is the case of ashoshios? Ashoshios are strips of glass, and what they used to do is they took these glass slabs and then they sliced them. Again, you need a glazier for that, a professional. They made it into smaller pieces, and they used it as window panes. So you have a larger slab of glass, and you would cut it down. Now, we're not allowed to cut down these slabs on Shabbos and make them into smaller strips for windows. And therefore, ashishios are mukt. And the Brisa goes ahead and says that if you're stuck on Erev Shabbos, the Leil Shabbos, and these slabs of glass are on the back of the mule that's carrying them, is Matir Sachavolim, Vasakim Noflim, he is going to loosen the straps that tie down these slabs to the back of the animal. The slabs of glass, which are mukta, will fall. The Afal Pi Shemishtabrim, and yet, even though we know for sure that when he removes the ropes that tie down the slabs of glass to the back of the mule, then what's going to happen is mishtabrim. I mean, this is a heavy slab of glass, and if so, then we're not allowing him to take the slabs of glass off the back of the animal. And we're going to have to do this trick, which is usually required because of mukta, to circumvent isur mukta, meaning we're not going to pick up the glass, the utensil, and put it down. We're going to just loosen the ropes and let it fall. And the Brisa says that even though the glass is going to break, he's going to suffer a financial loss, he has no other choice. He can't take it and lift it by hand. So the Gemara wants to know, well, if he's going to use this for the purpose of improving his windows or whatever it is, then the glass should have a status of a Dovra Nito B'Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Hosam B'Kulsa. Kulsa means that he's going to have to melt down this glass or cut it down in order to have use out of it. And therefore, there's no possibility of his getting use from it on Shabbos. So the normal heter that would apply to Kli Shemlat that you could lift it up with your hands would not be applicable here. And the only possibility here is to allow him to undo the ropes and let it fall on the ground. And Dekonami, and that's what it seems from this Brisa, the Ketani Dumya de Tevel. Right? The Brisa has in one breath the case of Tevel and the case of Ashoshios. And Tevel is Lo Chazio. My Tevel Lo Chazile. There's nothing he can do with it on Shabbos. Is Afhoche. He have two, these Ashoshios, Nami Lo Chazile. He has no use for them on Shabbos. He has designated them exclusively for the purpose of cutting them down and using them as window panes. Now, let's go on and analyze the Brisa. The Brisa says that he's not allowed to lift up these slabs of glass from the back of the mule. And then it says, my afal pisha mishtabim. What does the Brisa mean when it says that these are going to break? Now, you just told me that he's going to break down this slab of glass into smaller pieces. So what does he lose financially, so to speak, which the Mishnah is saying that the Brisa is saying he'll lose, by letting it fall onto the ground? Even if it smashes into small pieces, that's fine. He'll take those small pieces and use them for his window. Oh. So what does the Brisa mean when it says, Afal Pisha Mishtabrin? What does it mean, Afal Pisha Mishtabrim? In other words, we're not going to give him another option, even though he's going to suffer financial loss. What financial loss does he suffer by result of the fact that it breaks? So Gemara says, Ma'u de temele hefse muad nami chashishu kamashma. It's true that even after the glass breaks into smaller pieces, he can still use those pieces. And indeed, that was his intention, to cut them down. But there are very, very small pieces that will shatter, and those will be lost. So from the entire slab, he'll get 90%, and he'll be able to use them for window panes, but 10% he'll suffer a loss. That's called a hefseid muot. Ma'udit hema, I would have thought, if not for this price, that for the sake of hefseid muot, we're going to allow a violation of what's called mevatel kli mehechano, which means we're going to allow cushions to be moved into place such that the glass will fall on the cushions. Now, once the glass falls on the cushions, then you won't be able to move these cushions anymore because you don't want to suffer any more of a financial loss. And since, if not for the cushions, the glass, this slab of glass, will at least shatter, part of it, 10% we called it, will shatter into small pieces. He's going to suffer a 10% financial loss for, you know, instead of getting the value of the whole slab, the large slab will only get 90% of it, but not the extra 10%. Kamash Malon, the Bryson wants to tell us that we're not going to allow taking the Karim and the Ksusos and placing them underneath the slabs just simply to save that small hefseid. If it was a situation where he's going to lose the entire slab, then we would allow, instead of having the slab break on the floor, shatter into pieces that are unusable and suffer financial, we would allow him to take karma ksusos to override the iser of mevatel kli meichano for the sake of preventing a hefseid meruba. But if it's only a hefseid muot, because even in the worst case scenario, if there are no karma ksusos to cushion the fall of the slab, and the slab will break, it's only a certain percentage, a small amount of small shards that will be lost. And therefore, for a hefseid muot, we're not going to allow overriding the iser of kli of mevatlin kli mehechana. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Rabbi Shimon Yochai Omer, hoiso behemto teuna shalif. Shel Tvua, his animal is carrying a burden of grains that are Tevel, and he's not able, therefore, to lift up the Tvua directly with his hands because the Tevel is Mukta. Meniach Rosho Tachteha, what he can do is he can put his head underneath this burden on one side, and then Misalko, and he moves the burden with his head from one side, Litzad Acher, to another side, Vu Nofel Mi Elov. And now this bundle of Tevel, of non-misered grains, will fall on the ground. So he can't take it directly with his hands, he's allowed to take it with his head. And there's a famous Magen Avraham who derives from this Gemara that the Isur Tiltul Muktzah only applies when you move something with your hand. But if you move it with your body, you know, you kick it, you hit it with your head like a soccer ball, then that's not a violation of Tiltul Muktzah. Now the Braisa continues and tells us a story about Rabbi Shmuel, about Rabbi Gamliel. Chamoro, the donkey, shall Rabbi Gamliel, haisa teuna dvash. It was carrying a jar of honey, and it's apparently a very heavy jar. The animal could suffer if you keep it there over the entire Shabbos. So you really want to relieve the animal of the pressure and the weight of this dvash. But Rabbi Gamliel lo rotza leparka ad motzai Shabbos. He didn't want to remove the jar of honey until after Shabbos. L'motzai Shabbos mesa. And unfortunately, as a result of the weight for 24 full hours on the animal's back, the animal is gestorb. So we buried the chamor of Rav Gamliel, put up a little plaque, a matzeva. Here lies the chamor of Rav Gamliel. Okay. So the Gemara says, I don't get it. Ha'anan t'nan, our Mishnah says, no tel kelim hanitolin. you're allowed to remove from the camel or from the mule any kelim that are not mukta. Now, dvash is not mukta, it's edible. So what was Rav Gamliel's concern here? That he had to leave the honey on the back of the animal for 24 hours? Kishahidbish. We're talking about a case where the honey spoiled, you know, got soured, fermented. So now, we have a very strange situation over here. Rav Gamliel doesn't want to lose his dvash by loosening it and letting it fall onto the ground. And yet the dvash is worthless. It's mukta. Mukta means lochazile. It has no function whatsoever. It's not edible. It's spoiled honey. So Gmarantz asks this very question, Hidbish Lamai Chazi, why is Rav Gamliel so concerned that he shouldn't lose his jar of honey as a result of being so concerned about his jar of honey, he lost his mule? And Gmarantz says, Lixisa de Gamli. Honey has a function, and what you do with it is, if you have a camel that has a kind of irritations in its back, then you apply this honey, and it's very therapeutic for a camel. And he writes in the Hebrew, based on Rashi, Petza hanotzar begav hagamal machmas hamaso. The camel is used to carrying great heavy weights, and as a result, there are crevices in its body, and we smoothen that with honey. So now we have to go back to a sugya on Daf Nun Gimel that we don't do refuah on Shabbos for the sake of an animal. That's also included in the Easter refuah. So therefore, this dvash is worth something to Rav Gamliel, but it's mukta. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, the animal is suffering and will suffer for the next 24 hours. Yatir chavolim v'yiplu sakin. We learned in that Mishnah that if you have something that's mukta, it's a dover shein unito b'shabbos, then you're allowed to untie the ropes and the sacks will fall on their own. Why didn't Rav Gamliel get the dvash off the animal's back by doing this indirect movement of mukta, which means that you loosen the straps and it falls onto the ground? And the Gemara has to answer in some way that Rav Gamliel didn't have the option of loosening the straps. Why not? So the Gemara says, Mitzteru Zike. Now I'll give you the Hebrew translation and the English translation. The Hebrew translation says, "Hayu nivkaim nodos hadvash binefiloson laaretz," which means that in this particular case, the flasks of this spoiled honey were split open, and he says the honey would have been ruined. Okay, fine. So the bottom line is he had no option of letting this node, this flask of dvash, fall onto the ground. The honey would have been ruined when it hit the ground. So the Gemara asks, V'yovi karmuk sosos v'yanich tachteim. Why doesn't he apply the trick that we had of Rav Huna of bringing the pillows and the cushions to catch it on its way down? And the answer is mitanfei. What would happen was that inevitably the dvash would spill over onto these very beautiful cushions and pillows, and as a result, he would not be able to use those pillows on Shabbos. He'd have to send them to the laundromat. V'kamavatli kli mehichano. And as a result, now the cushions are not functional during the course of Shabbos, because you have to send them to the laundry. You're not going to sleep on it with the stains of this spoiled honey on it. And by letting the honey fall onto the cushions, he now has made these cushions immobile. You can't move them anymore because they have no function. And that you're not allowed to do. So the Gemara asks, why ikat tsar bali chayim? You have a choice now. You can either allow this honey to fall on the ground, you'll lose the honey, you'll suffer a financial loss because it's good for the backs of the camels, or alternatively, you're going to have the animals suffer for the next 24 hours. That's a doraisa. Certainly, for the sake of avoiding a doraisa, you should be suffering the loss of your honey. And not only that, if you don't want to suffer the loss of your honey, then cushion the fall of the honey onto the pillows. You'll violate the isur being mevatel klimei hechano. That's a rabbinic isur. And it kowtows to the isur of tzar bali chayim doraisa. So Gemara answers, Kasovra Gamliel was of the opinion that tzar bali chayim dirabanan. And we're not going to be docha and isur dirabanan for the sake of tzar bali chayim. By the way, we paskin that tzar bali chayim is doraisa, but this shita of Rav Gamliel reflects the fact that tzar bali chayim is only rabbinic, it's only a dirabanan. The Gemara goes on to the specific iser of using the animal on Shabbos. Abaye ashkeche le rabba. Abaye was very surprised when he found that rabba was the komishafshef le lebre agava de chamra. He would roll his child on the back of a donkey. I don't know exactly why the child found that so amusing, but that's how he entertained his son. Amale, Abaye says to rabba, I don't get it. The Gemara at the end of Beitza establishes that you're not allowed to have any benefit from an animal. And we'll see later on the same thing applies to a tree. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to benefit from an animal. Now you're playing with the back of the animal. So Rabbah responds, Tzdadim heim. Utzdadim lo gazru bo Rabbanon. When the Rabbanon enacted this Isur, this Gzera, that you're not allowed to enjoy the benefit of an animal, benefit from an animal, that only applied if you do it the regular way, what's called shchiach, the normal way. But I'm doing it with stadim, I'm using the sides of the animal. That's a very unusual kind of benefit that you get from the animal. So what I'm doing to entertain my son is called minat stadim, and that was not included in the original gzera when they enacted a prohibition of benefiting from an animal. I'm using the stadim. And Rabbi now asks himself a rhetorical question. He says, Minat Temra, how do I know such a thing? I have to find a source, and I'm going to find it from our Mishnah here in Shabbos, Disnan. It says in our Mishnah that if his animal was carrying that which is mukts on Shabbos, on its back, Matir Chavolim V'Sakim Noflim, he's allowed to loosen the straps and the sacks of mukta will fall on the floor. My love, shouldn't we assume, bechever guvalki. And that means shnei sakim amunochim mishnei tzidei achamor umechubarim yachad beritzuos. What you have here is two sacks that are on two sides of the back of the animal and they're connected together with a strap that goes over the back of the animal. Dahavilu studim. In other words, when he loosens the strap and the two bags, two sacks on both sides fall, then lechora, what's going to happen is, he says he's going to have to come close to the animal in order to stretch over to the middle of the animal and loosen the, you know, the ritsuos, these straps. And he's going to be leaning on the animal. There's no way he could reach the straps unless he leans over the animal. How's he allowed to do that? If he leans over the animal, the weight of the animal is supporting his body, and he's benefiting from the animal. And that's a violation of the injunction at the end of Masechta Beitza of being mishtavish b'behema. The answer is, Tzdadim, Havilut Tzdadim. He's only benefiting from the side of the animal. He's not sitting on top of the animal. And Tzdadim lo gazu be'rabbanon. Apparently, says Rabbi, you derive from this Mishnah here in Shabbos that the gzera of not benefiting from an animal does not apply if you're benefiting from the sides of the animal. And this is what Rava tells Abaye. And Abaye says that you have no proof to derive the heter of tzadim in animals from our Mishnah here in Shabbos, because lo, our Mishnah is not talking about a case where he is leaning over the, you know, the back, leaning against the sides of the animal in order to loosen the straps, but rather bechever agluvki. What's chever avluki? It means that there are no actual ropes or straps that are tying together and holding together these various sacks, but there's some sort of a he calls it a masmer katan sheniklas b'tabas. You know, he sets up a clasp, and he's not going to lean over the animal in order to loosen any sort of very tight knot, but rather he just simply removes this masmer, this little pin that's holding together this contraption that's balancing the two sakim on the two sides of the animal. And in this case, he is not leaning on the animal. He doesn't have to lean on the animal. Inami belichta. That's another kind of a clasp. Also, some sort of a chain. Rashi says it's a tabas. Achas betabashnia. It's one round chain in another chain, and he takes a small piece of wood. He puts it into the inner ring, and he loosens that ring. And the bottom line of this whole Elkimta of Abai is that he is not going to be mishtamesh b'tzidei abehim. And now we're going to see why Abai has, an agenda here to assume that even tzidei abehim, you're not allowed to benefit even from the sides of an animal. Esve, Abai asks a kasha from a Mishnah in Sukkah, shtayim b'idei odom v'yachas b'ilon. We need a minimum of three defanos, three walls for a kosher sukkah. He has two walls, regular classic walls, and he's got a third wall, which is a tree. Now, again, a tree cannot be used as schach, but it can serve as a dofen. Kshera. So the Mishnah establishes in Masechta Sukkah on Chof Beis, Amid Beis, that the sukkah is kshera. Now, I'm not exactly sure what the significance of sukkah kshera is, because let's look at the next line in the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says ein olin la b'yantif. We don't climb into such a sukkah. Their sukkahs were high up on yantif, and why not? So Abai says, you have a kosher sukkah. Why does the Mishnah prohibit you from using that sukkah? And the answer is dechakbe b'ilan. That what happens is, he drills into this tree, and he sets up a third dofen, a third wall, by putting on slats of wood that are going horizontally, and they're attached to the tree one level after the other. And what they used to do is, in those days, they used to put things on the schach, on top of the schach. Now, if they place things on top of the schach, kind of like storage on top of the schach, this schach is being held up by three defanos, one dofen of which is a tree. So in effect, the weight that you're placing on top of the schach is being held up by this tree. But it's not really the tree itself that you're benefiting from it. You're benefiting from the tzidei ha-tree. What does it mean? The tree is holding up those slats because you drilled holes into the tree in order to attach the slats. The slats are the third dofen, and the sukkah, the schach, is leaning on the slats. And that's called stud. Right? So stud means where you don't have a direct normal benefit from, in this case, the tree, before we were talking about the animal, but the same principle. And yet, the Mishnah in Sukkah establishes that you're not allowed to enjoy the benefit of that Sukkah, l'tzadim asurim, because by benefiting from the Sukkah and sitting in the Sukkah, you're benefiting from the Ilan. Why? Because the Ilan is holding on to these slats, the Dochik Bay, and those slats are holding on to the Sukkah, and he's putting something on top of the Schach, and that's called Tzadim. So here we see clearly that Tzadim is included in the Gzeirah. Whenever the Gzeirah was that you're not allowed to benefit from an animal or from a tree, it includes any sort of benefit, even an indirect benefit, which would be considered Tzadim. So Rabbi, how could you allow, you know, you're playing games and entertaining your son on the sides of the animal? So Rabbi answers, lo, you have it wrong. The case is not the way you have it, but rather de chafye la'ilan. What it means is he has two trees that are, so to speak, facing each other, and he bends the foliage of both trees, and that connects the two trees together with a common foliage that the branches of which are now intertwined. The anach sichu iloye, and he's actually leaning the schach on the trees, in this case on the foliage, the branches of the trees, to komish tamish be'ilon. So therefore, if he puts something on top of the schach is being held up by the Elon. He's benefiting directly from the Elon. So the Gemara asks, Abaye comes back and retorts, Yihachi Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the last part of the Mishnah in Sukkah? It says, Sholosh Bideon V'achas Bilon, if he has three full walls of a Sukkah, and the fourth is a tree, Ksheir of Yolam Bal Yotiv, then not only is the Sukkah Ksheir, but you're also allowed to use it. And if you're talking about a case where he bends over the foliage and the branches of the Elon, and he makes the foliage into his dofen, his fourth wall, is Amai Olin La Biyantif? Why in this case is he allowed to use it? He's benefiting when he puts things on top of the schach, he's benefiting from the Elonos themselves. They are holding up the schach. So now Rabbi says, wait a minute, and you, Abai, you're in the clear. You understand what's going on here in this Mishnah. Elamai, tzadim asurim. You're assuming that even in the case of tzadim, we prohibit use of and benefit from an ilan. Is sof amai olim la biyontiv. In the case where he has three defanos and his fourth dofen is this ilan, is how can you allow using it? I mean, you're going to tell me what? That he drilled holes into the tree and he attached a bunch of planks of wood into the side of the tree. And what is that? That's an indirect kind of benefit from the tree. But you hold, Abai, that tzadim is awesome. So why in the case where you have three defanos that are man-made and the fourth is the tree, why do you allow using that tzchach? Ella, but rather we're going to have to say that Hassam, that case of the three and one in the Sefer, is big vasa parsichna. That must be a case where you have a great volume, a large amount of foliage of branches. Really, the branches, merubim, they're coming from here and there, and they spread out in all sides. The ilan gufe, dofen bi'alma hu deshavye. Okay, let's see if we can figure out what ilan gufe, dofen shavye. So he says the following. He says that the fourth wall was formed from the foliage of the tree itself, and the Mishnah is talking about a case where the branches are very thick foliage that can be used as a wall as it stands. The schach rested solely on the three made walls, and it did not rest on the tree at all. The ilan gufe dofen bi'alma hu deshavye, the tree itself serves as a wall, meaning it's not a support for the schach, it's only a wall. The schach can be supported by the three defanos, even without the wall. So if you imagine that, without the tree, so if you imagine that there was no foliage, then that which you put on the other three defanos, meaning the schach, would still be held up. So when he put something on the schach that's holding on to the weight of something, he's not making use of the tree, because even in the absence of the tree, the schach would still be held up. And therefore, he's allowed to use this sukkah. Dekar nami diktani, I'm going to be medayik like to support that in the language of the Mishnah, zeh klal. The Mishnah says, kol ilu she notel or ilu yechol lavod, if you would even remove, imagine that the ilon wasn't there, nevertheless the schach would still be held up by the other defanos, olim lo biyont shmami. No, we see clearly that the case of the Mishnah in the Sefer is a case where he has three defanos, the schach would be held up by the three defanos, and the fourth dofen is the ilon, but it's not actually holding up the schach. Lema kitanoi. The Gemara now presents the possibility that this machlokas between Rava and Abaye about stodim, whether you're allowed to enjoy the benefit of the sides or the indirect benefit from the animal, or in this case the elon, is a machlokas tanoim. Why? Because the Brisa says ein olim la biyantiv. Rav Shimon ben Elazar omer mishum Rabbi Meir olim la biyantiv, that if you have a sukkah and one of the various defanos is not a man-made dofen, but rather it's an elon, then Rav Shimon Elazar says you're allowed to use that sukkah. My lav b'hakam iflagi, shouldn't we assume? Mar sover l'kstadim asur, meaning the first Tana holds that stadim is asur, and mar sover mutarim. And Rav Shimon, in the name of Rav Meir, holds its mutar, and therefore lo biyantif. So we're not worried about stadim. Om Rabaye lo. Abaye wants to say, no, everybody agrees that stadim is osur. Kuli amut stadim osur. That's Abaye's agenda, right? V'hocha betzideit stadim kamiflagi. What happens if it's even a third party of indirect? It's a tzad of a tzad. Okay? So he says the following, that in this case, right, the planks are considered one tzad of the tree, and the tree itself is holding up the planks. The planks are holding up the schach, and then he puts something on top of the schach. So that's already called tzideit stodim, right? He needs the tree to hold up the planks. The planks are holding up the schach. That's called tzideit stodim. That's already one step removed. It's indirect and indirect. Marsover tzideit stodim, the Tanakhama holds asurim, and marsover, but in this tradition of Rabbi Meir, tzideit stodim utarim. Rava Omar, nein, I'm not going to accept this. Mandi osu vitzdodim, osu nami vitzidit sodim. Mandi shori vitzdidit sodim, shori nami vitzdodim. In other words, you cannot differentiate between the size of the sides and the sides. If you hold that the sides are osu, and that was the expanded scope of this original gzera, then that's going to include sidit sodim as well. If, on the other hand, you want to limit it to the normal direct benefit, but stadim is already not included in the gzera, then tzideit stadim is not included in the gzera. Eisvei Rav Mesharshia l'Rava. So Rav Mesharshia now challenges Rava from a brisa. Noatz, and here we'll turn to Daf Kuf Nun Heim and Alf. Noatz yosed be'ilon. So he takes a yosed as a peg, and he bangs it into the tree. V'tolaba kalkola, and now he hangs a basket. This is the way they used to do erevin in the old days. And we'll learn that in Mirtz Shem and Masechta Erevin. And now he's standing in Rishus HaRabim. He sets up his Erev inside this basket, which is being held up by the pegs. The pegs are attached to a tree. And whether or not this Erev is valid or not depends upon whether or not he has access to the Erev. Now, if L'malam e'asar tfachim, if the basket is above 10 tefachim, so Rishus HaRabim goes up to 10 tefachim. Beyond 10 tefachim, assuming the basket is 4 tefachim wide, you have now a Rishus HaYachid. This, you may remember, this is called Traskal. We once had a whole sugi about Traskal. It's then Eiruv, since he's standing in Rishus HaRabim, he has no way of getting access to his Eiruv, which is now in a Rishus HaYachid. That would be a violation of Melechus Hotzah. But Lamata Me'asar Tefachim, anything below the height of Asar Tefachim, if that's where the basket, it's low down, that's already the Avir of Rishus HaRabim, therefore he has access from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaRabim, Eiruv, Eiruv. His Eiruv is valid, because the whole idea of an Eiruv is to have, the Eiruv has to be accessible. So the Gemara says the following: Taima did not Yosed be'ilon. The reason why the Braisa has this case where he knocks these pegs, these stakes, into the tree, and he's allowed to have access to the Eruv if it's Lamata Me'asar Tfachim, and it must be because the basket is not hanging directly from the tree. He could have imagined in the Braisa case where you have a branch and you have a basket with a rope around it, right? And you put the rope on the branch itself. No. He penetrates these stakes into the tree. Holo not safilu matmi asor tfok meni ruva eruv. His eruv would be inaccessible. Why? Because he would be benefiting from the tree. And the chiddush of this Mishnah is that he's considered to be benefiting from the tree, even though the basket is not hung up on the tree on one of its branches, but rather on the stakes. For a high tana, the kosar bitstodim, the koshari bitstidet stodim. Ah, maybe I didn't say it precisely. The reason why the Erev is valid is because the basket is not hanging on one of the branches of the tree. Again, in the case of Lamata Me'asar, the Erev is valid because he has access to the Erev and he's not violating the Isur of benefiting from the tree, which is holding up the basket, because the tree is not holding up the basket. He put pegs into the tree and the pegs are holding up the basket. The basket is hanging on the pegs. Is kashari b'tzidei tzadim. Apparently the reason why this Erev is kosher is because there's no gzera of benefiting from a tree in a case of tzidei tzadim. Amar Rav Papa says no. This is not a question on Rava. Hocha b'kalkola d'chukas kinon. Right, the basket is such that in order to get the Erev out of the basket, he's got to push his hands through this very narrow opening. And in doing so, he's going to shake the tree itself. Debahadi the shokaleli eruv kam minayid leili ilon. He's going to be shaking the tree itself. And that yinala do kam shtamish b'ilon gufe. Therefore, the braisa, in order to allow and validate this eruv, had to have a case where the basket is hanging from the stakes. Because if the basket was directly hanging on the tree, then when he gets access to his Eruv through that very narrow mouth of the basket, he will be violating the Shtamshus B'ilon. Hilchos of the Gemara finally concludes, Tzadim Asurim, Tzidei Tzadim Mutarim, not like Rava, but rather we're going to differentiate between Tzadim, which is Asur, and then that's against Rava, but Tzidei Tzadim are Mutar. Omer of Ashi, Hashta Diamrit, Tzadim Asurim, High Darga the Medallia, in the case of a ladder, and he's going to lean his ladder against a tree and climb up the ladder, Lo Lincha Insha Adikla. He's got to be very careful that he doesn't lean directly on the tree, Dahavilate Stadim, because then the tree would be holding on or supporting the weight of the ladder, and he, by climbing up the ladder, is benefiting indirectly through the ladder from the tree. Ella, but rather, what should he do? Linche agavaze lebarmi dikle. He should make sure that there's something separating between the ladder and the tree, so that the ladder now will have certain stakes or pegs that come out of the ladder, and they will fall onto the tree, and therefore it's considered tzidei tzadim, right? He's not directly enjoying the benefit of the tree, but rather indirectly. The tree is holding up those stokes, or stakes, we'll call them, and the stakes are holding the weight as he goes up the tree. V'chisolik, and now when he climbs up the ladder, lo linach kari agvaze, make sure he shouldn't, directly walk onto the stakes. You know, the stakes go up as well, but he should make sure his feet are on the rungs of the ladder and not on the stakes, because the stakes are directly connected to the tree and they would be classified as studim, elo lisnach, akonim. Make sure that he keeps his weight on the rungs of the ladder, not on the stakes that are connected directly to the tree, because that would be studim and that would be us. Okay, then, so we're up to the Mishnah here on Daf Kuf Nun He Amid Aleph. And that's where I leave you for Shabbos. B'li Neder on Sunday, we'll be able to learn Kuf Nun Vav. And Monday, we can make a Siyum B'li Neder on Mesechta Shabbos. If anyone's interested in learning a little bit of Meshech Chachma for the parasha, we'll get together at about 10:30 this morning, a little bit later on. And I want to wish everyone a Shabbat Shalom. It's been a great week with a lot of accomplishments, and I thank you all.